Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I like Google Meet.
Yeah, man. Why?
I like it a lot better. You can do a whiteboard.
We don't need to do a whiteboard.
We can look, I can start a poll. Oh gosh.
I guarantee you that over the next 10 episodes, we will not use the whiteboard function once. So whatever makes you happy, but I'm just saying it's pointless.
So here's what we need. Here's what we need. When we do live events, all right, we need to
when we host math class on the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. We can
a
we can
jam file. Patrick, I'm a married man. I can't open any jam files.
I can't jam. This is ridiculous.
Welcome to The Crunch, the only podcast that requires no money down and guarantees 0% APR for the first 5 years. It's your boy, Ethan.
And I'm Patrick.
How you doing? What's going
I'm
on?
I'm doing great. Did you notice that I turned on closed captions?
No, I didn't.
It's doing a really good job.
Stop. The features are distracting from the quality of the show.
The other day, someone from America asked me if I do transcripts of the podcast.
If you didn't know that there was a magazine named America, that's just kind of a funny sentence.
That is a really funny sentence. Someone from America Magazine. Someone from America Magazine asked me if we do transcripts of the podcast, and I said no, but now that we have closed caption abilities, we can do transcripts of the podcast, Ethan.
Can we?
Yeah.
Someone still has to put it into a text file. It's not like the closed captions automatically fill it. You know what I mean?
I'm sure they do.
I mean, it's doing it
right now.
Well, it's just displaying on the screen as it's happening. Who's to say that it's saving anywhere?
Oh, that's a good point. I think if just for all intents and purposes, we should have transcripts of our podcast. What if we want our podcast to be accessible to the deaf?
The thing with podcasts is that they're just not accessible enough to the deaf.
That's what I've been saying for years now. I've been like, we really need to make sure that our podcast is in word form, text form.
I don't think we need to do that unless someone wants to do it for us for free.
If somebody wants to do it for us for free,
unless
we will do it.
Alternatively, if America Mag wants to publish our podcast every week in their magazine, that's fine.
I'm not going to stop them.
I'm not going to stop them either, but do you guys know what you're getting into?
We got to reach out to the Jesuitical guys, the Jesuitical peeps again. Mm-hmm. We had a good podcast with them
I wasn't on
2018.
I was gone. That's why we had.
Yeah, that was one of my. That was one of my solo ventures. Okay, I'll turn off the podcast or not the podcast. I'll turn off the closed captions. I need these closed. The closed captions are non-negotiable. I need them. But that's so cool, right? You can just turn on closed captions.
It's a waste of time.
No, it's amazing what science can do.
I suppose I'm curious. Not to hurt anyone's feelings, but. If you're working in a job and you're a deaf guy, do you think there's going to be a lot of like video calls in that job?
That's true, but it's not just for people. It seems like people are hard of hearing.
I suppose it just seems like a feature that they added. They're like, oh look, this is for all the people who are deaf and hard of hearing. Whereas all the people who are deaf and hard of hearing are just like, I'm not getting on that call. Read the email recap when it comes out. You know what I mean? Like, they're just not. It's solving a problem that doesn't exist.
But it's really cool because like it was voicing us even when we were talking over each other. It could come up with
this is
who
the problem.
Was talking.
This is the problem. I came up with a legitimate like this is why it doesn't work. And then he says, no, but it's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. That's the only reason it exists.
That's how we've gotten into the technological mess. No, that's how we've gotten into the technological mess that we're in now is because Steve Jobs was like, no, but look, it's cool. And now teenage girls are developing tics, you know, and it's
yeah, you're right
because it's cool.
It was cool. It was cool to be able to see all your friends' face in book form.
Mm-hmm.
And now...
If only I was able to have closed captions on everything, then it would be Good to go. Let me tell you about
it. Closed captions feels innocuous to me.
That's fair. I'm just
feels wanting, not as
yeah,
bad.
Yeah, not worth getting.
It feels like something
about.
That won't change the landscape.
Can I just say this? Closed captioning, I'm a fan.
I'm pro closed.
Make sure you select the SAP function on your remote to turn on closed captioning for this public broadcasting system program.
The S&P function?
SAP? Do you remember SAP. At the very beginning of like Arthur, they'd be like, for closed caption, closed captions provided by...
And the Science Foundation.
Yes, or whatever. And like no one knows what that is.
I was like, the Science Foundation just sat there and typed out this Arthur episode? That's what I thought when I was a kid.
Interesting things that exist. There's the Science Foundation, and then there's also like the ad group that makes those, you know, responsibility. Pass it on. Who makes
the
those?
Ad council, yeah.
The ad council, the Science Foundation. What are they doing? What are they up to?
What are they doing?
Sounds like a very, very suspicious place to put government money. It's like, oh, $16 billion to the ad council this year, huh? Interesting.
Yeah. Definitely.
I see a lot of activity from the ad council in Eastern Europe. That really, I've got some questions about what the ad council is doing with their money.
This was on an episode of New Polity. They were talking about billboards specifically, and they were like, they we passed by a billboard that was like, happiness, pass it on. It's a picture of Kermit the Frog. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what is this?
Yeah.
Like, you see it and it's so normal, and then you stop and you think about it more and you're like, why though? What is it for? It just seems very not anything. You know what I mean? It's very empty. It's like, this is a nationally recognizable brand next to a moral platitude.
Yes,
in
but
the
that's what
of
all
downtown.
That's what all billboards are. It's like a brand, like Toyota, believe in
Toyota, freaking trucks, man.
It's some kind of rejoinder, like believe in yourself. You know?
Oh my gosh! I was at the movies. I went to see Dune.
Oh goodness! Finally.
Okay, so I went to see Dune, and I'm sitting there in the audience by myself because Phoebe went to go get Sour Patch Kids.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And all of a sudden, Mark Wahlberg's on the screen.
Yeah.
I legitimately can't remember if it was Mark Wahlberg or the guy from The Martian.
Matt Damon.
I think it might have been Matt Damon, not Mark Wahlberg. Anyway, okay. I'm picturing Mark Wahlberg in this thing. So he's like, he's walking through this museum, and he's like, men and women throughout history have taken risks.
Uh-huh.
And it's like astronauts and like Orville and
Redenbacher.
And men and women took risks. He didn't know what was going to come out of that kettle, but boy,
like,
howdy.
It's like a guy going up to space, and then in the next scene, it's Orville Redenbacher standing over a stove, like, ooh, ah, the popcorn burning his skin. Ooh, ah, ooh.
We need to wear long sleeves now. But he's like walking past all these people. He's like, yeah, throughout all history, like, people took risks. And he's like, are you going to take risks? And then it like fades away and it just says crypto.com. I was like,
what? That's awesome.
I was like 10 years too late. All right. First of all,
I'd buy a ticket to that movie, whatever it is.
That's
I want to see
so, it was so funny. I was laughing to myself because all I could think of was like, If it's that big, like no one was like putting commercials on television and movies for like, hey, somebody figure out airplanes, please. Please somebody, can somebody figure this
That's
out?
That's true. That's
like,
a good point.
The only time you get commercials for things is after they have a marketing department. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, it's very clear to me that crypto is so, but it's they're building this brand, whatever decentralized. It's weird that there was a commercial for a decentralized currency. Is that strange to anyone else?
No, it's not. But the commercial wasn't for the currency itself. It wasn't a commercial for Bitcoin or whatever. It was a commercial for crypto.com, which is a website that probably brokers decentralized currency. So
that's hilarious to me.
Yeah.
That's really funny.
Yeah.
And it kind of shattered the idea of what crypto is. It's like, yeah, we're free from big organizations. And I'm like, yeah, until a big organization decides to make a cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's only a matter of time before Tesla coin comes out or whatever.
Yeah, someone was like talking about how the Facebook metaverse is going to be heavily tied to crypto and decentralized web identification, web 3.
You know what Mark Zuckerberg really wants to do is base his entire life's work on a currency that most people don't understand.
No. Not based on crypto. It's going to be based on blockchain.
Oh, well.
That's what they were talking about.
I don't even know. Nobody knows what that is either. So.
Yeah, it's like a foundational. It's foundational for understanding cryptocurrency. So it's. Exactly. But someone was talking about that's what the metaverse is going to be like.
Don't imply that you understand all this stuff. Just.
It's like a ledger. That's how everyone describes it. It's like a ledger.
It doesn't make any sense.
I don't know what that is either.
Why don't we just have a ledger if that's the case?
But they were talking about, I looked at Phoebe and I was like, I don't know what the metaverse is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what it is, but I do know that I would prefer if myself and my children did not live to see it.
I think that's fair.
That's, if you're going to choose a dystopian reality, why mm-hmm. would you choose Ready Player One? That's what I want to know. Like, you could have chosen 1984, you know, where
even
we,
Hunger Games. It's like everyone kind of lives together. We all know what we're doing.
12 kids.
Yeah, it's only 12
kids. It's 11,
kids.
You know?
It's 11 kids. And I mean, that's fine. And if you don't get picked, oh, darn, I have to go logging with my family. You know? Oh, well.
Big deal, you know?
You'll be fine.
We could have picked Harry Potter. That was a nice dystopian future.
I wouldn't say
future.
It was a dystopian future. Can we get back to the important part of the
system?
Anyway. Important part of the conversation, which is that you went to go see Dune.
Oh, yeah. I went to go see Dune.
Can you tell me about what you thought, please?
I liked it.
Dune spoilers. Wah, 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 wah. Insert Dunes. Bagpipes here.
Dunes. Yeah. Dune was very good. They didn't do what the book did, which is like give us a really solid relationship with all of the fellas. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The fellas. Like Duncan Idaho and mm-hmm. Thufir Hawat.
Gurney like, Halleck.
Yeah, they didn't even say his name. They said it once and it was like gone. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They didn't distinguish enough between what Halleck was supposed to be and who Duncan Idaho was supposed to be for Paul. Mm-hmm. And like they didn't bring in a lot of like his formation as a person.
Correct.
Was due to the influence of all of these different men. And yes. So as they die one by one and betray him, spoilers,
mm-hmm.
It's like a crushing blow. Because like there was something really shifty about
Duncan Idaho does not betray Paul Atreides. I will not accept any slander.
No, none of them betray him except for the doctor guy.
Except for the doctor, yeah.
Yeah. And like his betrayal was like not as no one gasped. I was, you know, because like it was like
mm-hmm.
okay, he was a double agent the whole time. Fine, he was in two scenes before this.
Yeah.
So it was almost like if anyone was going to betray him, then like in Dune they made it apparent. As you say, he in the book, Frank Herbert made it apparent that it's like this house is like impenetrable.
Oh yeah,
like they really had to commit to getting that hunter seeker in there. You know,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, why did they do the hunter seeker if they just had the doctor was going to betray him the whole time?
I think that's explained in the book.
That's the point. Yeah,
not particularly sure. But what it is exciting and very fun. And I liked it because here's the thing. The only way to do that book and you have all of the characters and all the relationships and everything fleshed out is to do a television program.
A television show, yes.
Which is, goodness help us if we do a television program of Dune, because I just don't think it would be any good.
I'm afraid that... My one critique was it did feel like a really long montage. There was too much montage. You know, it was too much like there wasn't a lot of character development.
Yes, but there doesn't need to be character development because it's all setting it up for the second part where all of that happens. So,
okay, fine.
Here's the problem, right, is that it's such an in-depth world that nobody has any background for understanding, you know, mm-hmm. even for things like Captain America, you know, people understand like he's a guy with the shield and he does the thing. There's a cultural basis for
yes.
it somewhere.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of cultural basis for people coming into Dune. And you so
need spices needed for interstellar travel. Very important.
You got to explain all these things. And so
the
all
shadow
the time,
government run by women,
you got to explain all that stuff that, and that's all the time that they had to spend on exposition yeah. because instead of spending it on, you know, Paul with Duncan and Paul with Gurney, I'm sure there's a director's cut somewhere of all of these scenes that just were cut because they had to preserve the storyline, you know. I think they trimmed it down as best they could, and they provided the very fundamental elements, which are, here's all this wild crap happening in space. Here's these people betraying these people. here's Paul. He sees into the future. He's going to be big, bad, scary guy. And now they're with the Fremen. And that's kind of all you really need for the first half, you know?
I'm concerned for the franchise because, as we all know, I'm not concerned
for the franchise.
You're not concerned for the franchise? I think the second movie might fail.
I don't think it will.
You don't think it will?
No. Why would
I mean, the first movie was like such a big hype, and the reason they didn't start filming the second movie, this movie had been done for like a year and a half.
Yes.
It's been ready to go for a while.
Oh yeah.
And the reason they haven't started filming the second one yet is because they wanted to make sure this did good on opening weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it did. So they're going to start filming it now.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be out in 2023 at the earliest.
Yeah.
It's going to lose steam.
I don't understand. What you're describing is like pretty much every movie that's ever been made and had a sequel is like the first one has to do well before the second one is greenlit. When else in history, other than the Marvel Cinematic Universe and Lord of the Rings, has the second movie been greenlit before the first one performed well?
No. What I'm saying is it's such a gigantic undertaking.
Sure.
That 2023 is like pushing it.
Yeah.
It's a huge movie.
Yes.
It's what I'm saying is that it's a movie whose visual special effects and all that stuff are on par with the movies that they know are going to do really well. Like the only reason they'll put that much money into a Star War or an Infinity War or another kind of war is because a lot of war is going on. What's wrong with the world, mama? People living like they ain't. Anyway, the reason they'll put that much money into it is because they know it'll do well. So like they'll put a bunch of money into it and like, it'll happen relatively quickly. So they don't... The Marvel Cinematic Universe, Star Wars universes, they don't need to wait until opening weekend. They're just going to make another one next year. That's just how it goes.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is like people are used to that. And so they're like, oh yeah, I forgot. They're going to be in two years, but it's probably going to be three. People are going to be like, oh yeah, I remember Dune. And they're not going to watch the first one again. And they're going to be like, what's going on? This is confusing. And it's not going to do as well.
I think you're wrong.
Well, our podcast will still be here.
Yes, Dune 2. It will.
When Dune 2 Electric Boogaloo comes out.
When I think what's going to happen is, because just objectively, Dune 2 is going to have more action and more romance and more intrigue
than the first
part, right? Because there's going to be, Paul rises up with the Fremen, right?
Sure,
there's going to be a really cool thing where, you know, all the people from the desert are killing all the white people in the city. And a lot of people are going to like that, right? That's going to be a very popular thing.
It's going to be great.
There's going to be more worms. There's going to be battle scenes. There's going to be Fade Rayutha versus Paul. It's going to be this little, you know, desert boy versus prince boy. And then
when I read Dune, I pictured, what's his name again? I don't know how to pronounce it.
Fade Rayutha.
That's the nephew of the Baron, right?
Yeah.
I always pictured him as the little troll boy for the little troll king for the prince from Trolls, the movie Trolls. That's how I pictured him. And so I was not picturing Drax from
No, Guardians. That's the Beast Rabin. That's a different guy.
Oh.
Yes.
Wait. No, wait. Drax
Drax is the Beast Rabin who is, I guess he is the nephew. I think the Baron maybe has a grandson or something. That's like the boy that Paul fights at the very end of the book.
Yeah.
That's not the Beast Rabin. That's not Drax. That's a different guy. He wasn't introduced in the first part of the movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen with Drax.
It's been a while since I read the book. I read it
years
ago.
So
3 years ago.
Let me tell you this. There's going to be people riding worms. There's going to be uprisings.
They put worm riding at the end of the movie.
There's going to be it's always just a teaser trailer. Be like, look at all this cool stuff that's going to happen in the next movie. There's going to be visions of a future where Paul has killed 60 billion people. It's going to be great.
Huge. Crazy. Huge.
And I think it'll do well. Maybe it's just because I'm a fan, but I thought the first one was really good. I love the bagpipe scene. I watch it every day on HBO Max.
Very good. Did you get HBO Max just for this?
No, it comes included with my AT&T internet for some reason. I don't usually get on HBO Max and watch things, but the other day I was feeling kind of down, and so I pulled up the bagpipe scene and I watched it a couple times.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yes.
Dune.
I enjoyed it. It was great. I loved it a lot.
It didn't drag.
No, it didn't.
No.
I watched it twice, and I thought the second time it was going to drag, but the second time it was even better than the first time. So, Highly recommend if you haven't seen Dune, if you haven't read Dune.
I'm so sad that Thufir Hawat is dead.
Thufir Hawat is not dead yet.
Wait, he doesn't die?
He didn't die in the movie. If you don't see anybody dead, they're not dead.
Oh, true. Okay.
Gurney Halleck's still alive. Thufir Hawat's still alive.
I need to reread the book.
You should reread the book.
Cool.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Well, I never read Dune Messiah, so no spoilers for Dune Messiah, please.
Oh, Paul kills 60 billion people.
Well, whoop, I knew whoop. That part. Because okay, everyone on Twitter's like, oh, I can't believe they're like writing this movie that celebrates this fascist. I'm like, ah.
It doesn't celebrate anybody or anything.
It doesn't celebrate a fascist dictator, guys.
There's also some really weird stuff that happens in
Dune Messiah. We're just used to characters. We're just used to, you know.
Hot e-boys being the heroes of the stories.
Yeah, he killed people, but it's because like he had like a bad parent child
relationship. His dad was mean to him. Well, his dad's not mean to him in this one, and look at what he does.
Look at what he does. Yeah,
figure that out. We're not okay.
You want to have a topic?
I got a topic. Hey, thank you for listening to this episode of The Crunch. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a stimulating intellectual conversation, but I wanted to pause the episode real quick to let you hear from some of our sponsors. We will be back right after this. Patrick, hit us with a crunch on that jingle.
Oh, gosh. My jingle writing skills are growing flat. Now it's time for a crunch on that.
That wasn't that bad at all.
Thank you.
You seem to self-deprecating jingles.
I love a good self-deprecating jingle. I think it's hilarious to sing something happy that's actually sad. For instance.
Okay.
Never mind. I don't have a friend.
Ring around the rosy.
Yeah, sure. Hey, did you know that's actually about the Black Plague?
Yes.
Even though it was written after the Black. Anyway.
Yeah.
Go on with your topic.
They didn't write songs before the 1800s.
No, so they couldn't write songs because the Catholic Church was locking
was
up all
banning them from writing songs.
And burning music.
And people. all right. Topic. Okay. I just had to think for a second. Did you go to Mass this Sunday?
Yeah, I did.
Good.
I know.
That's wonderful.
It's crazy.
Do you happen to remember the gospel reading?
Of course I remember the gospel reading. I talked about it at Life Teen. It was the widow's mite.
Yes. That's what I would like to discuss today, but tell me, what did you guys talk about in youth group? I'm interested. Maybe you already did my topic.
So when we talked about the widow's mite, and I was like, I was writing this talk and I didn't know what to do because I waited till last minute. And a kid who was not Catholic and later I found out not Christian came to Life Night last night.
Great.
And I was like, I need to present. This is basic Kerygma time, baby. Like, we're going to go as brass tacks as we're going with these kids who haven't been to Mass in a month or so. Yeah. I got to go even more brass tacks with this kid. So I was like, basic gospel message. And I was like, let's just start from the gospel reading because I was really jiving with it. And I told the whole story. I was like, I had to explain everything, like what a Pharisee is, what a temple is, what the treasury is, you know, and all this stuff.
What a woman is.
And I actually thought about it because I was like, instead of being linked to the text as it stands, I added a little something, little illustrative thing. Mm-hmm. Imagining that the Pharisee was in front of the woman and he was dumping all of his coins into, I realized something that I'd never thought of before. If you're dumping coins into a hollow, it's going to sound really loud and everyone's going to notice.
Yeah.
And then everyone's looking over there to see this big fancy boy. And then this woman walks up with two little coins and like, I was like, that must be really embarrassing. And so I had them like kind of think about what it would be like to be that woman. And that's why Jesus noticed her, because everyone was looking over and he like pointed her out to the apostles and was like, this is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And I took the patristic interpretation.
Indeed.
Of that. And I was like, those two coins, the number two in scripture, usually means body and soul. And I was like, this woman is walking up and she's giving her whole body and soul to God. Like, she's walking up to where the Jews went to be with God. So it's like she's walking up to God's presence. She's giving everything she has. And I was like, that's the difference between Christianity and every other religion. Mm-hmm. It asks us to give everything we have. Why? Because Jesus gave us everything he had.
And then the kids' minds exploded.
I know. They were like, what?
Their heads flew off.
Yeah. And then we went over to the church and we like prayed to the Stations of the Cross together. It was nice. Awesome.
That's so good. This is perfect because it leads right into what I want to talk about. You set the stage magnificently.
Thank
Patrick.
You. Professional podcasting Pat.
Yes. The idea that she gave everything, and that's what Jesus points out. I want to discuss how Americans have a very weird notion about what giving everything entails.
Okay.
So just kind of some prayer and conversations I've had with some people about this reading. An interesting thing is that the many rich people that are going up and giving out of their abundance, it's kind of ironic in a lot of ways, because if I were to ask you, Patrick, do any of us have abundance? What would your answer be?
Yes.
How so?
I mean, like, we all have stuff that we buy that we don't need.
Sure. But at the end of the day and at the end of our lives, is there anything that's left over?
Oh, yeah. No.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. No, there's not. So the very idea of abundance that we possess.
Yeah.
Is already just a farce.
It's a non-starter, yeah.
It's a non-starter. So I think that's a really interesting place to begin when thinking about this passage, is that all of those people who are walking up and dumping all of these coins in there out of their quote-unquote abundance are really just lying to themselves about the true nature of being human, which is de facto a state of poverty.
Yeah.
And that is when we talk about, you know, time, talent, and treasure, and what do you give? We immediately think about, you know, oh, where do I have space in my life to give to this thing, right? Like, oh, hey, I need some volunteers on my core team for Life Teen. Oh, sorry, we just don't have a lot of time right now.
Mm-hmm.
Insert any number of things, any number of requests, any number of good uses for your time, talent.
How do you know how much time you have?
Exactly, right? Like, and even more than that, is there ever, quote unquote, enough time?
Yeah.
Like 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, for however long you live, is, again, de facto not enough time.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is always more that you could do.
Mm-hmm.
And I just would, I've just been thinking about this and praying about this and thinking about some things in my own life, which we can talk about. But I wanted to get your thoughts on, like, why we as Christians, and especially American Christians, just seem to not believe in that true sense of our poverty, in the fact that we really believe that we have an abundance in all of these areas. And yet at the same time, we seem to always, like, not have enough, you know, like we're always mm-hmm. craving that more abundance. I don't know. I've been thinking about that. I'm curious if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, because, like, I mean, we're going through an off-tour development thing right now at my parish, and it's always very frustrating because, mm-hmm. I mean, you see people pulling into the parking lot in, like, you know, Beamers and Porsches, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. our parish gives, like, 0.4%. No, sorry, 0.04%. No, it's 0.4% percent of its income. We don't even give 1% of our income, which is the national average for Catholics. Also, the national average for Catholics is 1%.
Which is crazy.
Which is stupid. It's dumb. Mm-hmm. And it makes me upset. And so, like, what we're doing is the priests, like, standing up there like, can you guys just give, like, 2.5 or something? like, it's like, please, you know? Mm-hmm. We can't keep the lights on, you know? And so, like, we're going through that off-tour development thing right now, and it's frustrating to me because it's like, well, why don't you guys have such an abundance? Why don't you give of it? Mm-hmm. And it's like, that is the wrong mindset. It's like, we're mm-hmm. all poor.
Yes.
And I was thinking about that because I was like, what makes, I mean, it's clear to me that the widow didn't give everything that she had,
mm-hmm.
you know,
she did not slit her own throat and throw herself into the,
yeah.
into the thing.
She didn't, like, very clearly she kept money to feed herself and her possible kids.
The clothes that were on her back, even.
Exactly. And so, like, she didn't give everything she had, right? So she was giving what she could. Let's say that percentage-wise, like percent for percent, the Pharisee was matching her. It is an attitude thing. it's like, oh, this is something that I can afford to give, but I'm going to keep the rest for myself because it's mine. Mm-hmm. It's not a stewardship mindset. It's a, mm-hmm. It's kind of like a consumerist mindset where it's like, mm-hmm. here's what my budget item is for tithing. And here's what my budget item is for groceries. You know, it's like,
yeah.
And even that can be stewardy, you know, it's like, well, here's what I have in my wallet and I might as well, I'll throw you a couple bucks, you know, cause I can afford to do that. I'm not going to miss mm-hmm. this money. Right.
I just think when we approach, even let's just think about it from a perspective of relationship with Jesus and time and prayer and that kind of thing. Like people, you know, once their kids leave home and all these things are like, oh, now I finally have time to start investing in my faith life, or I finally have time to start investing in. And I just, there's something so, because I just don't believe that everybody that I meet is just so gosh darn balls to the wall busy that they that they don't have time to pray or come to mass or anything like that.
Yeah.
Like if you, we just have such a selfish view of our lives and of our time. And I think that's just in the water in America. Mm-hmm. That everything is oriented towards you being able to live the way that you want. And it's like anybody who spent a Saturday or a Sunday watching football or a weeknight watching a couple hours of TV and then has the gall to tell me that they don't have time, you know, or we do this to ourselves too. Like I'm not excluded from this. Like I spend, you know, a bunch of time, wasting time on the internet or reading some stupid stuff. And then I'm like, oh, I just, sorry. You know, my neighbor will ask me for help with something and she's old and Chinese and hard to understand. And so I'm like, what do you want? You know? And then I'm like, oh, sorry, I don't have time. And it's like, well, I wish that we had some kind of a better hierarchical understanding of what is and is not an actual demand on us. Like what is and is not an actual demand on our resources. 'Cause first and foremost, it's to God, right? So that includes to your vocation, right? So your time and your resources have to first and foremost go to your family or to your priesthood or to wherever you are, right? And if you're unmarried and you're maybe a student or something like that, whatever obligations you have to your family or to whatever state of life that you're in, right? Like that's where it has to go first. And I feel like we don't think hierarchically, right? Like we don't think like if my neighbor Juan was to ask me, hey, can you come over here and weed my garden? And it's 4 p.m. on a Saturday and I don't really have anything else going on until 8:00 or whatever. And I say, oh, sorry, because I don't want to, then that's wrong. Right. But if Juan comes over and it's 7 p.m. and I know I have to make dinner for Emma that night, 'cause she's coming home for work, then it would actually be wrong of me to go over and help her because my first obligation is to have dinner ready for my wife. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I feel like we struggle to think hierarchically, and that leads us to thinking that we have way less than we actually do, because what defaults to the top is my free time and my autonomy, and that always becomes like the first and foremost thing rather than what God is asking you to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it's interesting that you put vocational requirements first. Because like
that's just the main way that most people serve God on a daily basis.
Yeah, and I think it's important to do that because it's like I think you do have to. I mean, because most people would say like, "Oh, well, prayer comes first." And I think it does.
Yes,
but I think when you're setting up a prayer routine, you have to be realistic based on your state in life. So like
a friend of mine was telling me the other day, just real quick, he got up early to pray. And it was like super early in the morning, 5:30 or something like that. And his 1-year-old starts crying. And he's like, come on, dude. Like, God, I'm trying to do the right thing here. And God's like, are you stupid? Like, this is your son.
I mean, I know the answer, like, yes, but like, yeah.
You know, it's like he was getting all upset because he was trying to, quote unquote, do the right thing and give God all the right things. But God gave you a son to take care of.
To take care of. He figured he knew that was going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so. No, it's that's really true, because it's like you have to be realistic about like your prayer reality. And I my history professor said this. He's like, kids really ruin things. They ruin daily mass for me and my wife. you know, and he was like being tongue in cheek, but it's like, it's true. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, you know, you might not be able to go to daily mass every day. Mm-hmm. You got to get your kid to school, you know?
Yeah.
Church should, figure that out. But, yeah, it's tougher. And, you know, there's that horror story that I've heard of like this, this guy who like missed his kid's birth because he was like, he had to go to daily mass. You know, that's not thinking hierarchically, right?
You've heard that?
It was a horror story from a Franciscan couple.
Yikes.
I did. Yeah, it was really, it really sucked.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, like he was in the PDP and he was like, oh, I can't be a priest, so I'm going to get married. And then he like basically tried to still live his PDP, Priest of Discernment Program, lifestyle in marriage. It's not, you can't do it.
Oh, dear.
But you're right. Hierarchy is important. I think putting your vocation up first is important. And it's really like it's not like thinking hierarchically and putting God in that hierarchy is, dare I say, liberal.
Okay.
Because it relegates God to a part of your life as opposed to the whole of your life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
This is my God time. This is when I read my Bible and I do my pray, and then I'm gonna go do the worldly things like taking care of my kids and like going to school and voting, you know, all that stuff. I'm gonna go do the other things, like, you know, vote on a bill about abortion, and that's a separate thing from my prayer life, all that stuff. And like that's all that hierarchy. It's not like God's the top and then everything else. It's like there's the hierarchy. You have your vocation. You have like your job and all this other stuff. The stuff that supports what's lower on the hierarchy is the stuff that supports the stuff that's higher. So it's like your family life is the most important, and your job is there because it supports your family life, and your health is there because it supports your family, and like your job supports your health, or, you know, that sort of thing, however you want to put it up. But God is outside of, he exists separate from your hierarchy, and he moves and informs everything.
Yes.
Ethan, you, me, and the people should make our own hierarchies. I think that's something we should be thinking about.
Yeah.
As a practical
tip. I totally agree.
Practical post-liberal tips with Ethan and Pat.
Because I'm tired of saying it myself and saying that I don't have enough to give. Because last week, God made it very clear to Ethan that it doesn't matter how much Ethan has to give. That is like not even an important factor in the equation. So I was super sick last week. Had a head cold, you know, and
You get really bad head colds.
I do.
You like can't function.
Yeah. Just headache, sore throat, all these things. So I'm resting up, and Friday comes around, and I like try to go to work on Friday because I'm feeling better, and like I don't feel as well as I thought. I'm like losing energy really quick, you know, because it's just hard to sit up straight when you've just been laying down for a couple of days. And I have to give a talk in Tulsa on Friday night, and
yeehaw.
I just wasn't going to miss it, you know, cause I knew I had to give this talk, and it was the last soccer home game of the season. And I want to see the boys win the regular season championship.
Of course.
And it was Sam's birthday. I had to go for all the things, but I had no talk written cause I'd been sick. And so I'm like, Emma, you got to drive. I got to write my talk. And she says, okay. So she's driving. I fall asleep in the passenger seat. I have nothing written, nothing prepared, except for just like a teensy tiny little idea that I'm going to talk about my testimony, and I'm going to talk about John 3:17, the underrated verse in John 3, which is that the Son of Man did not come into the world to condemn it, but to save it. And I knew I wanted to talk about that. But that's all. That's all I had written on my page. I didn't have an outline. I didn't have any bullet points. I had nothing. And so I walked up and I gave the talk, and multiple people told me it was the best talk that they had ever heard.
Great.
Me give. Not the best talk they had ever heard generally, but the best talk they ever heard me give, which is awesome because it's totally, I know for 100% fact that it's not because of anything that I did.
Yeah.
Right? Because it was a moment where I prayed and I asked for the Holy Spirit to speak, and he spoke. He showed up. And that combined with this reading this weekend and being sick and coming back to work this week, combined with all the other things that I've been thinking about and praying about, has just made me realize on a deeper level, like, holy cow, like I have so very little to offer in terms of like my energy and my physical capabilities and my intellectual capabilities. Like, I'm on the whole, like, pretty average, pretty weak when compared to, like, God.
I would say so, yes.
Yes, very controversial statement. But God doesn't need, like, Ethan's super most prepared, most physically ready, most intellectually and emotionally and spiritually ready for everything all the time, right? What God needs is for Ethan to put his coins, so to speak, in the treasury and just say, do whatever you want with this. I'm going to go take care of my family. You know, like, because the widow was a widow. So I don't know if she had, maybe she had kids or, you know, who knows what she was doing.
A lot of them, I was looking at paintings for my talk and like stained glass windows. And a lot of them were, the widow was a young woman with a baby.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Interesting, right? I'd always seen in my CCD book as a kid, it was always like a little old lady. Old and I'm lady, like, I don't think that counts as a widow.
Yeah, that's fair.
Nine times out of ten. Person. That's an old, yeah, it's a woman. You know, sometimes old women's husbands be dead, you know?
Right. But I just wanted to share that and express that and hopefully help people think about, like, we just put so much pressure on ourselves to, like, do all these things and make a big show about the things that we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And God doesn't really care.
He's not really impressed.
He really is super unimpressed. But what he does care about is if you actually say, hey, I actually trust you more than I trust myself. That's kind of a spooky thing to say out loud, but
yeah. In fact, Jesus, God, who is God, fun fact.
Indeed, yes.
I don't know if you knew this, but 50% of people were like, "I don't believe." The pillar. Did you see the pillars?
Oh, I haven't read it yet. Yeah, I saw it come
in. It's crazy. People. It was like, I don't believe. It was people who were Christian saying whether or not they believed that Jesus was God.
Yikes!
And I just like, I don't know if I want to know. I don't think I want to know. I think it was about 50. I don't know. I might be misremembering the stat. I don't want to quote it without knowing, but
that's all right. People do that all the time.
Jesus is God. Fun fact. Yes. But so he was there when that Pharisee was trying to make everyone impressed. And I like to think that like Jesus, everybody heard the clang, 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 and everyone looks around like, oh, who was that? And Jesus is kind of just like, he's still talking to someone. He's like, hey, man, like, how's it going? He hears the clanging and he's just like, so I'm really interested in you. You know, like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And then everybody else is turned around. He's like, what are everybody looking at? And then he sees the woman and he's like, that's it. He's not impressed by her, but he's like supportive and he's like encouraged by it. He's like, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
And so it's like, God, the only way to impress God, if you could do such a thing, is to act like him and just give what you have, what you don't have, you know, like you just give everything. Put it all in the treasury. Just be like, this is yours. Not like, hey, everybody, look at me. I got so much money. Cling, 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 cling. I will say something that my spiritual director, when I was talking about tithing, because I was like, I feel guilty. I don't tithe. This was back when I was starting my job. And he was like, definitely tithe, but like, don't like let that be your standard of whether or not you're giving well. Because he's like, what people, especially people our age, tend to not give is time, because it's more important to us, because it's more apparent that it's slipping away. It's more obvious time is slipping away than money, because money feels infinite in a sense, because there's always another direct deposit.
It's just numbers on a screen.
It's just numbers on a screen to me, and so it's not really tangible. And you mean parish is like auto withdrawal, you know what I mean? It's like there's barely any action there. But giving takes a lot, because, you know, not only do you have the time you're spending giving, but you have to like drive there and drive home and like think about it, you know. There was a statistic that I do remember was how many people spend two or more hours a month in service. And the lowest group was, Ethan, take a guess.
18 to 20.
Religion. It was based by religion.
9-year-olds. Oh, based on religion?
Yeah, it was separated by religion. The religions that spend 2+ hours or more volunteering.
The lowest?
Yeah, the lowest.
Catholics.
No. Atheists and agnostics. So take that. You do need God to be moral.
I was going to say atheists, but yeah. I was thinking that atheists sometimes go and like clean up parks because they feel bad about the planet or whatever.
No, they might, but they don't, apparently. I see. No, the highest group was Muslims. 66%. said 2+ hours or more. And I was like, what good for you guys. The next highest was like 28%. And I was like,
evangelicals?
I think it was. And then the Catholics were next. Because I think like a lot of Catholics, there's a lot going on at churches. You know, there's like a lot tied to.
That's true. You know, it's really easy to say that you're giving time and service when in reality you're just going to hang out with Betty and the girls.
It's a fish fry or a Columbus, Knights of Columbus meeting. Yeah. Join the Knights of Columbus. We're still pro Knights.
Pro Knights of Columbus. One day we'll get sponsored by the Knights.
I should just reach out. Actually, we should. You should. That's great. They got money. They sell whole life insurance, whole term life insurance. Join the Knights, but don't get life insurance with them.
I do want to float away from the money thing just for a little bit because it's easy to get wrapped up in the money.
Oh, we were talking about time.
We were talking about time. Go get back in the time.
Oh, yeah.
About the time.
Yeah, money's not. That's what I was saying. Like, money really isn't the thing. It's like we want to give time because it's more acutely. We're more acutely aware of the fact that when we give time, we can't get it back.
Yes. And thank you for reminding me.
Money just feels like an exchange of services.
Because when we give our time, we're so used to our time being spent how we want to spend it.
Indeed.
Like just people's responses to things like, you know, having my camera on when I'm on a Zoom call or whatever, or not being able to have headphones in at work, or not. Like the internet goes out on a drive and you can't listen to the thing that you want to listen to. Like we're just so used to being able to fill our days with things that are pleasant to us.
Yeah.
And so when all of a sudden an opportunity to do something with our time that is not immediately pleasant comes up, we just don't like, we're just, you know, have no interest in it. And then when time does come about, it's like, oh, I'm going to give my time to things that are pleasant to me. It's like, yeah, props to all the focus missionaries out there, you know, but like given 2 years to serve on a college campus and have college hours and live the college life for another 2 years, it's not that crazy of a thing. Like,
yeah,
it's, I love my time as a focus missionary. It was definitely hard, but it's not nearly as difficult as people make it out to be.
Yeah, because it was hard for me when I was doing mission work over the summer to get people to like even try to get people to donate because I was like, my housing is covered. My food is basically covered. Mm-hmm. What's the point of asking people for money?
Right. The thing that I didn't do a lot of when I was a focus missionary that I did a little bit of closer to the end, but, you know, not nearly as much as I should, was go downtown and serve the poor and spend time with the marginalized and spend time with the students on campus that were not like me, you know, like I just didn't do a lot of that because that wasn't really the vibe. The vibe was energize your Catholic center.
Chicken party.
Right. Which is good.
Chicken party totally was a good huge thing. Success.
It was. It was a huge success again this year, I've heard.
Good content.
Chicken party lives on. Yeah. So we have a generation where it's like, unless this can go on, you know, the gram or the resume or, you know, be something that it's fun with my friends.
Yeah.
Then I'm not really interested in it. Like going over and fixing my neighbor's like garden for whatever reason, you know, even though it's like, I've weeded it 5 times, Joanne, there's no weeds left, but you want me to dig again? Okay, I will. You know, like
I'll do that.
This is awful and I hate this and I'm not getting anything from this, but like, that's just the example that happens most often in my life is because my neighbor always asks me to do things for her. But
she seems sweet.
She is very sweet. She trick-or-treated at my house the other day.
Does she have kids?
No, she does not. She's very, very old. She trick-or-treated. She said, "Do you have any candy?" I said, "No, I don't have any candy." She said, "Oh, well, in that case, there's something broken in my kitchen. Do you think you could come over and fix it?" And I said, "Juwen, you are not allowed to trick-or-treat and then ask me to come and fix something at your house. This is a trick."
It's not a treat.
She just laughed at me.
That's really funny.
Yeah. So I don't know if what I'm saying is making any sense or not, but
it does make sense.
I just think that we are so gosh darn selfish, like to an extremely faulty degree.
Yeah.
On the whole.
Yeah. But Ethan, leisure is the basis of culture. So yes, I should watch YouTube so that I could be more cultured.
That's the other thing is people tell me like, "Oh, Ethan, you're making fun of people who watch TV shows and watch it. That's how I relax. That's how I just turn my brain off." What if I told you you shouldn't turn your brain off?
No, you
shouldn't. What if I told you that that's a bad thing to do? And that people for thousands of years were able to relax without
turning their brain off.
Turning their brain off.
Yeah.
You know? Take a nap if you want to turn your brain off, you freaking loser.
It's true. Yeah. My wife stopped watching TV. She's not working right now, so she's not working probably at all. So like she's like, I am going to just be sitting here all day, and I don't want to watch TV all day. We don't have a TV, but it's like, you know, you can still fire up Netflix. But you know what's interesting is like watching Netflix on a laptop sucks. So it was not as fun. And so she was like, you know what, we're just gonna put this away. She started just reading classic works of fiction. Mm-hmm. She's like finishing up To Kill a Mockingbird. We're having good conversations about literature. And I'm like, this slaps. I love talking about books. This is great.
Yeah, that's the idea of abundance. That's where people get that whole like Netflix, YouTube, whatever, football on the weekends kind of mindset. It's like I gotta recharge so that I have enough to give later. It's like, what if I told you that you're never gonna have enough to give and you just need to be okay with that and you stop grasping for things that are going to make it seem like you have more than you actually have?
That sounds hard.
It is.
I don't wanna.
But no one ever said life was supposed to be easy or pleasurable.
It's true.
I don't know. I hope this episode isn't too much old man yelling at clouds, but
make a hierarchy chart, you know?
Put
your most important things at the top. Put like, you know, your family and the things that support your family and the things that support like you exist, continuing to exist. That's important. Like your health and your, you know, like go see the doctor about your foot because it hurts all the time. You know, Patrick, just go see the doctor.
And then realize that there's time and space in that hierarchy. And if you ask God to like bring you opportunities to give either to your parish or to the poor or whatever, like he's going to give you opportunities. And then you just have to look at your hierarchy and say, actually, I have way more time and space in this hierarchy than I thought I did, you know, because all the things that take up most of my time actually don't go on the hierarchy anywhere. You know, social media does not end up on the hierarchy because it doesn't help keep me alive or help feed my family or help make any money.
Yeah.
For some people.
Yeah. We met because of social media.
Yeah. Which is great.
Tiwa Tolkien made a good point. She was like, the best way to use Twitter is to not use Twitter the way they want you to. So the best way to use Twitter is to have a locked private account where you only follow people, you know, unless you have like a ministry or a platform. And I'm like, cool. That's a good point. That's a good point. I like that.
Yeah. Please don't lock your account. I like to look at your tweets.
Whose tweets?
Your tweets.
My tweets?
Yeah.
Oh, you want to be able to see my tweets.
Every couple of days, I type in directly the usernames of like 3 or 4 Twitter accounts that I know have good tweets. And I just read them. And then I close the window.
Wait, you've read the ones that I've put up recently?
Yeah.
Like what?
Well, I don't remember exactly what they were. There wasn't anything notable, but it was nice.
That's cool. I've put some okay ones up, and they get like 2 likes. I'm like, nah, delete. Not worth anybody's time.
That's good. You want to do Dr. Ethan's dating corner?
Sure.
Yes.
I had what I thought was a really good tweet about one of the previews before Dune was for one of the new Scream movie that I didn't even realize was I just remember the mask from like, you know, kids at Halloween. And I was like, it's kind of weird that like all these 80s reboot movies, horror movies are happening because like Guy with Mask and Knife is no longer scary because like at any time you could be involved in like a mass casualty event that'll be on the news. You know what I mean? Like
it's true.
It's just ridiculous. I thought, surely this is a hot take that people will appreciate. They did not. No one's afraid of a Guy with Knife anymore unless there's big, noisy, scary music telling you to be afraid of him. You know?
It's interesting how there was that movie that was kind of meant to be like a very realistic Columbine shooting. You've ever seen this movie?
No, that's an awful idea for a movie.
Well, I'm just thinking about things that are legitimately scary in 2021. And if you had like a movie set in a high school where a school shooting was happening and like live and over the 2 hours of the movie, it was a real time school shooting. That'd be a pretty terrifying film because that's like a legitimate, like that hits at what people are scared of now, you know?
Yeah, but it's like, it's too much, you know?
But so when someone was breaking into people's homes when the babysitter was there and she had just had sex and she gets stabbed in the kitchen. Like, that's not too much, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
horror movies are weird.
They are weird, but it's interesting how, I don't know, there's always some kind of expression of fear in some way other than what it's directly related to.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right, I got a Dr. Ethan's Dayton Corner for you. It's about technology.
I'm ready.
All right.
I know it hurts.
I'm sorry.
It's not your fault. All right, you came to the right place, you ding-dong. It's called communication, baby.
Welcome to Dr. Ethan's Data Corner, sponsored by Catholic Match. You can go Woo-hoo. To, please go to the link in the description below to give us questions because we're running low on questions. Okay, we need to get some Dr. Ethan's Data Corners out here. Please don't let this please. Go the same way as Hot Take Time Machine. You can follow Catholic Match at Catholic Match on Instagram. Thank you, Catholic Match, for sponsoring another episode of the Crunch Catholic Podcast. Ethan, are you ready for the question?
I'm so ready.
Okay, this one comes from Anonymous.
Yes.
What do you want? This is a general question. It's not like personal. This is a generality. They want to know. Okay. They want to know about guys. So presumably it is a women. when does technology make it easier, the less people, guys, to make effort and move or action? I did not read this. I skimmed it, and that's why it reads like a Siri voice to text. Most of guys immediately turn down the conversation when they find out the girl is from outside of the world and prefer to find near their location. These guys don't believe the getting to know through video call first, rather to have physical contact soon. This person very clearly does not speak English as their first language.
I see.
They may have Google translated what... When they find out the girl's from outside of the world, they don't want to video chat with her.
When they find out that I'm from Pluto, they decide that they don't want to get to know me anymore.
It's ridiculous.
How rude.
I'm assuming she's saying that guys don't want to, when they find out the girl is long distance, they don't want to get to know her through video call first. They'd rather have physical contact right away. Why is that, Ethan? Why is that, Dr. Ethan? Because long distance relationships will kill you. As the Naked Brothers Band sang.
Relationship.
What?
I had a long distance relationship.
Singing this song from the sky, no matter if it's heaven or hell.
What?
I know I love that girl, but it wouldn't work that well.
I think most guys would just want to...
Someone got that reference. Someone was like, I too watched the Naked Brothers Band on Nickelodeon.
I got in trouble for watching the Naked Brothers Band on Nickelodeon because my parents walked downstairs at the moment when some guy started kissing some girl. And they're like, what are you watching? And I was like, I don't know
what this program is. I'm not sure. They were the proto Big Time Rush.
Everyone seems to like it, so I've got it on. That's about all I can say. I don't know how to answer this question, to be honest with you.
It's a tough
question. Because I think it's very obvious that guys are physical creatures, and most guys on dating sites tend to enjoy physical contact.
Sure.
So the answer is to whoever wrote this in, that's just how men are. If you find one that does want to get to know you over video call, then he's probably a keeper. But in that case, you just have to keep trying. You know, you can't just force a bunch of dudes who don't want to get to know you over video call to want to get to know you over video call.
Hey, they're allowed to have preferences.
Yes. That's what people
move say. Somewhere that they are there.
Yes, that's true. Where maybe have you considered moving into the world?
Have you considered moving to Pluto?
Have you considered moving from out of the from out of the world to, I don't know, Chicago?
Yeah.
A lot of guys in Chicago. A
lot of boys in Chicago.
Just walk down the street, you bump into 1,000 boys.
Yeah. Big old Chi Town, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know anything about Chicago.
Do you want one more long distance question?
Sure.
This one comes from an anonymous girl. Online dating, specifically from a distance. What do I do? How do I not make it weird? I'm talking to this really nice Catholic guy online. I'd like us to date, but he lives in a different country. I have no idea how to make it work and not be weird. I'm not the most romantic person, nor do I have experience with dating or flirting, so any help is appreciated. I also have no idea how to explain to my family what I'm doing. So I'm dating this guy. Yes. And what's his name? His name is MacBook Pro, and he is the boy on the other side of the MacBook Pro.
His name is Franz, and he lives in Austria. Sorry. I don't know.
He's going to Sarajevo soon. I'm sure it's going to be a great trip.
There's a lot of things in these questions that I don't know the answer to. I would say you probably can't date someone who lives in another country if you don't know them and they can't move to where you are and you can't move to where they are.
It's probably tough. You're probably going to have to move soon.
I would say one, how old are you? Two, how fungible are you? And three, are you willing to relocate? And based on the answers to those questions, I would say go for it. It never hurts to move to a new country. But I'm trying.
It can hurt sometimes, Ethan.
Sometimes it hurts. But generally, I would just say let this one go.
Cool.
Yeah.
Doctor Ethan's Dating Corner. Another couple of patients seen. We're like an urgent care clinic.
We are just pumping them through. That'll be $400.
That'll be $400, please. Thank you. You didn't get my Archduke Franz Ferdinand joke.
I am sorry.
You said Franz from Austria, and I was like,
yes,
easy.
I was thinking of the guy from A Hidden Life is who I was thinking
of. Oh, okay.
I don't know his last name.
Oh, man. Well, that's the podcast.
That's the whole show.
Another successful episode of the Crunch Podcast.
Indeed. I'm gonna have to edit a lot on this one because I feel like I didn't make any sense during the topic.
I got a really good positive takeaways, so I don't think you're gonna have to do as much editing as you think.
Okay, well, thank you. I hope everyone doesn't think that I'm mad at them. I just want us to give more from our poverty and less from our freaking abundance.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. Anyway, speaking of giving to it from our abundance, I'm going to go lift heavy things, namely my own body, because I'm doing bodyweight exercises now. So.
Speaking of giving from our abundance, patreon.com/thecrunch.
Patreon.com/thecrunch, guys.
Give from your poverty. You might think that you don't have enough to give, but maybe you do.
We're going to.
And you just need to think about it.
Give to the patreon.com/thecrunch. It's a great place. Thank you to all our sponsors. We are going to get more regular sponsorships on the show so we can get rid of Red Circle ads.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I literally have a bunch of like blocks on the Red Circle ads that say don't do this, don't sponsor this, don't sponsor this, don't sponsor this, and apparently an ad got through.
Dang.
So that's the problem with automated ads. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we'll work on fixing that just so that we can like earn out of needing Red Circle ads. But yeah, correct. So but if we get a lot of donors on Patreon, I know you guys, I really appreciate everybody's been giving on Patreon. If you like the show, send us a couple of bucks and be like, hey, I like the show. You can join our Facebook group, facebook.com/thecrunchcast. And then if you're a Patreon member, you can join our special Facebook Patreon group. It's secret and it's more fun.
Amazing. Patrick, do you have anything else for the people?
This episode of The Crunch has been sponsored by the National Science Foundation.
Thank you all for listening. Please pray for us. We will be praying for you, and we will see you all